Yes, my name is Pete Robinson. I'm the manager of the podcasting at Oxford. I've lost my hair over the last year, doing a huge amount of work trying to put Oxford University online. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the challenges, because it has been a challenging year, but the opportunities, because it's been quite a fun project with a nice straightforward deliverable at the end of it, and talk a little bit about thinking about podcasting at a research university. There's an old joke about a tourist comes to Oxford and says to a guy, can you take me to the where the university is? And of course, in Oxford, every single building in the center of town is connected in some way or other. Even the pubs are owned by the university. So I'm going to chat through some things. I was thinking yesterday about what exactly I wanted to say, what was the kind of the key points. And I started to realize I'd actually gone through something that was quite unusual at Oxford. I'd been part of a project that actually initiated institutional change at Oxford. And I'm sure a lot of you who work here know it's quite a strange place. Things don't change very often, very easily. And most of the people, even the academics themselves, and even the people on pro vice chancellor level, are often confused about how to make things happen at Oxford. So I'll try and give a little insight into the things that have happened in the last year here at Oxford for this project, because I think they're quite interesting looking at how things happen in an institution. I'm also going to talk a lot about community building, because I'm quite a big fan of that as well, from a few other projects I've been involved in, and you guys are a community, and I'd like to try and get us all talking about things that matter to us as a community. And another thing that's become more and more of interest to me at the moment is open access to open content. Because it's an FAQ that people ask us about our project, everything I'm going to talk about here is open access, it's open content, it's freely available, it's standards-based, it can be downloaded by anybody on the web or via iTunes U. It's good stuff, it's open, it's free. So this is a story of putting Oxford on iTunes U, and it started sometime early last year, April, May time, and we launched in October 2008. I'm not going to talk too much about iTunes U itself, because I think Pete's covered kind of a lot of the key points. This was a screen grab of the site, probably around about January. Plug again, just for this bigger project, Steeple project. We did a bit of agile bid creation, an Opencast get together last July, because we realised all of a sudden the three or four of us were facing exactly the same problem at exactly the same time, which is to do with workload. How on earth do you cope with a huge amount of work to do with audio video thing when you're launching a whole institution online? Heck of a lot of work. Technology's not quite up to it. Need to do some things. Let's get a bid together and see if we can innovate and move the thing forward. So Steeple's about investigating and developing and documenting sustainable institutional podcasting. And hopefully you've all grabbed this little booklet that we made this week as a freebie. We're not that up Vera Wiki, and we're very excited about it. Wiki's quite cool. Enterprise-level podcasting, and it's a partnership. That's another unusual thing about this project between Oxford, Cambridge, and Open University. I don't think out of the 31 other people on the strand, I don't think anybody else is in a partnership, because it's an institutional strand. But we're trying to say, you know, let's try and build up a relationship, and with slightly different universities doing slightly different things. And lo and behold, lots of other people have knocked on our door, like UCL, and we're good friends on the project with, and Reading, somewhere over there in Nottingham. And lots of people are joining us to try and think about all this stuff. So the Steeple project, what its actual deliverables are going to do, is going to show you some cool stuff about aggregation across three universities. So we've already started to visualize what sharing our content across Oxford, Cambridge, and Open University. Free content, open to everybody. Web portals, we're looking at those, how we can present all this stuff in a framework for our institution. And as Peter's quite rightly said, you might have different frameworks for different delivery channels, for different people, for different parts of the world, for different aspects of things. Server encoding engines, I love that kind of thing. I'm a codec guy. I know my H.264 from my H.263. I get excited about it, me and Ben over there. We have chats in the pub. Content management, workflow, and legal processes. Dull, 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 dull. Okay, but legal stuff is so important. It's going to something you've really got to get grips with when you get involved in any repository content management kind of project where you're putting it online. Okay, so everybody speaking today is going to have to sign the same form that all my podcast guys do, or all my academics do, which is basically saying they're happy to release this material. The Peter owns his talk, probably, I hope, maybe. And he has to give me permission to use it, release it. And I'll just quote Professor Ron Cook, chair of the GIST board. This is something pointed out to me by a few people in the last few months. He was asked, I think, by GIST, just as he retired from his post, to just kind of do a short report that would say where the UK HE is going in the next few years, what needs to actually happen, a vision document to go quite high up to government level. And what he was saying, basically, he's a bit worried and concerned that in the UK, we are lagging behind the European projects to do with open content and sharing learning resources, and we're definitely lagging behind the American model of sharing material, things like MIT OpenWare. And we need to move forward as a UK HE community quite quickly on this, because we're getting left behind. We've got a cracking organisation such as JISC, which a lot of American and North American communities actually think of as their private research tank based in the UK. We need to think how we as a UK HE community are going to move up, step up a gear to release our content. And it isn't a technical problem, trust me. I'm a technical guy, I work for the computing services. I'm going to be out of a job in a few weeks if we go off to Amazon. But trust me, the technical side of sharing content has been done and sorted out, and we know how to do it. It's quite an easy thing. So I want to ask you some questions. And if you're Twittering or writing notes, or you've got some stickies next to you, or you want to bring it to the panel session, I'm going to ask you some questions. Now, I want you to really seriously think about this, because we are the UK HE community here, and we are the practitioners in this area. Can we create a UK audio video corpus of material quickly and soon? If we can, where should that be hosted? Who should look after it? How much will it cost? How do we market it? How do we communicate it to the people who want the learning materials? Okay? These are important questions, and I really genuinely would like you to engage with them and actually write some notes down and Twitter about it and bring it to our attention later on. Okay, I wrote a report in 2006 for JISC about sharing image repository work. And I came up with this model of sharing stuff. And I was convinced at that time that the most important thing about sharing materials is to try and make it subject-centric, so that people, a lot of repositories of learning objects and materials have been a bit like the Millennium Dome. They got built and they just sat there waiting for the content to be put in it and waiting for people to come. People didn't know about them or didn't care, didn't want to put content in them because they weren't subject-centric. They had no natural community of people that were engaged with them. And funny enough, the model I came up with was kind of a lightweight RSS kind of model, which is almost identical to the way iTunes U works, where the content resides in the institution. So the files stay in the thing, and we just have a lightweight bit of XML that points to them, and it's picked up by other delivery channels. So let's get back to Oxford. Strange old place, highly devolved IT environment, and it's also a highly devolved research environment. And after a while, you think about that and you realize actually that's a good thing for research. People know what they're doing, they should be left to get on with it. Huge amount of IT staff or people related with IT, lots and lots of colleges and domains and departments. Question mark about AV units. When we started this, I've been here quite a long time. I've worked in multimedia at Oxford and know a lot of academics and done a lot of video projects. But even I didn't know how many AV units there are in the university or how many academics were doing things. We do an annual survey at the Freshers' Fair. This is just quite interesting because it's just saying about what the students do. So we survey them every year. 96% obviously chatting and emailing, surfing websites. Hardly anybody, luckily, gambling. Look at this big statistic here. This is 95% of people on Facebook. we also asked them what they own. Just these graphs, we're really trying to say on these graphs is like just the kind of the general trends. You know, everybody's now got a memory stick. The MP3 player is now getting up towards about 75%. Laptop ownership, 91% at Oxford. Now, I know the students are probably coming from an affluent demographic, but that's probably going to be the same for every university in the next year or two. So stepping back, last April we had the opportunity presented to us to be part of iTunes U, which we felt had straightforward advantages, a clear destination to be have a clear delivery channel for our material. We didn't have any material. That was our problem. Unlike Cambridge, an open university, I didn't have a big pot of material that I could point at and say, oh, great, we'll just put that into iTunes U. I had nothing. So I had an empty Excel spreadsheet, and I started tapping things into it randomly, hoping that I could get up to 200 very, very quickly. And I had a chat with my boss, and I said, oh, yes, we've got lots of content, don't worry. And he nodded and smiled and said, yes, Peter. So then we initiated a legal discussion that had to happen. You've got to kind of think there are some legal aspects to using third-party hosting services for anything you do. And lawyers are, the timeframes lawyers use are glacial. Yeah? So whatever, they say think of a programming time and double it. Think of a lawyer's time frame and just, you know, epoch it. Okay, so we needed to start that legal discussion so council could actually have a discussion, our highest body, about whether they wanted to go forward. And everybody's quite happy eventually and thought it was a good thing. So quickly scope the product. Now, my job to kind of get all of this rolling was also to think how, because we not only did we have no content, we didn't actually have any money. So, and we weren't funded by JISC or anybody, it was just me and young Oliver at the back. So we had to say to ourselves, how on earth are we going to get content really, really quickly with no money? Which is always a good challenge, I think, no money. So we whizzed around. We'd already been involved in some projects around the university to try and promote podcasting, and I do teaching about this kind of thing. And the admissions took up the challenge a few years ago and said, yeah, it's probably a good thing, students. Always nervous about coming to Oxford because some of the strange terminology we use about courses and tutorials. So they were on board already. They said, yep, we know it's good because we won an award for it and students like it. So they're in straight away. Good. Bit of the spreadsheet filled in. Webcast videos. We've got some colleagues over there from the Oxford Internet Institute. I knew we had at least 120 cracking good, straightforward, old-fashioned lectures that are 50 minutes by world-class people talking about world-class internet activities. So people like the head of Wikipedia, Tanya Bryan up at the top, who's now Jonathan Zuterain, who's one of the best speakers I've ever heard in my life, who was at Beyond a few years ago. So I said to myself, well, we've got some of that stuff. That actually represents kind of the problem that we solved. We had tons and tons of really good stuff, and it was buried deep in departmental and internet sites that only if you knew about it or if you were lucky enough. And trust me, Google doesn't find a lot of this stuff, yeah? You don't find the videos hidden away in departments unless you really know they're there. So we had this problem that we had loads and loads of good stuff that represented the university really, really well. You know, research talks, conference talks, the best of the best. The James Martin Institute, which is a fantastic organization moving the university forward, buried on departmental sites. Well, not buried, but, you know, not promoted enough. So what we did, with no money, hardly any content, we had a system for generating RSS that we'd an institutional system that we'd started for sharing information a few years ago that I've been trying to promote heavily. Perfect, it's already understood what podcasting RSS is, we could leverage that. Straight away, we started having training sessions, even though I didn't know what I was training about or what the project was or we had got legal approval. So I was having these strange conversations with people, my stakeholders, saying, please, please give me some content and get ready and go, 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 without being able to tell them what the project was or mention Apple, or even saying if it's going to happen. But I thought it was better to get everybody interested and get some buy-in straight away. We knew we'd have to get a web portal created straight away to see what podcasts we had. So as they started to come in and as we started to generate them, we could visualize them through a web interface. Now, because we've got no money and we've got a short time frame, the only way to do this is to devolve things out to people. So we at the center could not cope with the work to do it ourselves. So you have to empower people out in the departments and the technical people out there and the academics who might be interested or anybody at all. You have to empower them as quickly as you possibly can so they take ownership of their own content and they create their own content. And we do a lot as much hand-holding as we can. So you start off with like kind of you start off with one man balancing on top of two men. So we also don't have a graphics department, which I apologise, sir. again, it's slightly different Oxford to Open. We just do it ourselves. It's terrible, but it's the way we do. So we had some people, risk takers, you know, early adopters, evangelists, whatever you call them. The guy on the right, Andreas Busch, professor in German politics, great guy. For some reason, he started podcasting. He came to some training session we did, and he just said, yeah, I'll do it, sounds fun. He's into that kind of thing, and he's put his whole German politics course online. He's a professor, I think in Germany as well. We chatted to him, and he said, yeah, it sounds like a good thing. It's online anyway, something or other, but I'll just donate it. We also had the medieval English material by my colleague over there, Stuart, which people had always said was a really good set of little podcasts about medieval lectures. Stuart's quite a charismatic speaker, and he'd been telling me for quite a few years that people were actually downloading them. And I was saying, yeah, Stuart, I'm sure they are. Then one day he said, one day he told me he got some statistics from Apple, and I said, yeah, that sounds like a lot, yeah, I ignored him again. And then I looked on iTunes, and it was something like the 15th most downloaded educational podcast in the world. And I went, oh, Stuart, you're right. So you've then got to go and find some more stuff. So what we did is we whizzed around as quick as we could, looked at the calendar, looked at all the public lectures that we could possibly find that were happening, rang up people. And so we got a lot of material that was just basically public lectures that are happening. But being Oxford and a research institution, these are usually professor-level type of things. They just tend to be that way inclined. So the gentleman at the top is now retired, and he gave a talk about stem cell research, but he just happens to be ex-head of British Medical Council, and he just happens to be in the House of Lords, and he debated a lot of key ethical debates in the House of Commons, and he's an advisor to everything. So he's retired, but he's a kind of core member of his own medical community. We'd already started to find stuff, so the stuff in the middle is the philosophy lectures, the John Locke philosophy lectures, and I didn't realise quite how popular John Locke is in part of the American community. So, what we did at Oxford, could we do it nationally? Yeah, that's another question I want to ask you about. You know, a lot of people think projects are difficult because they've got to have a big deliverable, and you say to yourselves, well, where do we get going? Where do we start? The old joke, the Irish joke about where would you start? Oh, I wouldn't be starting from here. You've got to start with somewhere. So we've already got some open content. So is it possible for us to think a bit more about nationally, about sharing stuff? So I've been interested in all this kind of community sharing, buy-in and things like that, and I started to look at why people might actually want to get involved. What's the psychology of giving and donating? You know, you've got reciprocity, which is basically, you know, you're going to expect somehow that something's going to happen back, which is going to help you. Reputation is something in open source worlds is well known, that certain programmers just get a reputation for donating code, and they get a little bit of fame. They don't want the ego side of it, they just want a reputation. Altruism in its sense of the public good. So again, we've got a lot of people at Oxford who have done all they will do in their career. They've hit the top and stuff like that, and they just want to keep the subject going as much as possible and get young people interested and excited about their area. So we had a good corpus of engineering material that came from the engineering department who just want to get more people into engineering and are quite happy to donate as much material as they can. This is just something I've been thinking about a lot as well. You know, if we did get this corpus of cracking stuff, yeah? Pete's got his language, Spanish language for California. Yeah, I've probably got some cracking Chinese. We could do some tour of material. So I've listened to hundreds of hours of material, and I've started to see big patterns in different topic areas, different disciplines. So for instance, climate change, it goes across so many different subject areas. You know, it's physics, oceanography, economics of climate change, physics, you know, cloud formations. Thinking about pathways. So this podcast community, it's devolved content driven by local needs. So it's not predictable. The methodology we've used, it isn't predictable, the type of stuff we're going to get. So day to day, I don't know what's going to come in. So every day something new appears. And a lot of it is not to do with me. I just don't know. The model I've used is a devolved model. Conferences happen, events happen, it just comes in. The benefits are quite obvious, though. And people, the project has been considered to be a big success at Oxford because it's hit, in terms of institutional change, it's a strange one. It's hit different target points in our institution. It's hit the marketing side of things. So we're giving away lots of free stuff, and you know, Oxford should do that kind of thing because it's a world-class university. It's hit the admissions agenda. It's hit the outreach side of things, getting people thinking. It's also hit the global side of things. you know, you say to people, do we want to be a global university? Yep, we do. The answer to that is obvious. So we've now got around about 200 members in our kind of community. So we have some systems that support them, some VLE systems and some training mechanisms, and we've got about 200 people. Those aren't the actual academics themselves. Those are just people who regularly end up helping us create material. Some of them might be academics. I also made the decision to put people's faces on the album cover, because I thought, if you actually see the academics, it kind of convinces people that they exist. So you see a wall of people's faces and you recognize that's the head of division who's given you a podcast. And that's the kind of number one research scientist on cancer at Oxford. Yeah, it pushes the argument a little bit forward. Just want to talk about a thing I saw in the reference is just cropped at the bottom of the screen, but it was in an Alt-J magazine journal this March, talking about multimedia repositories and why some of them nationally have not taken off as they should. And the guy, I think it's a guy from Southampton, he's talking about basically the Cathedral and the Bazaar book written by Eric Raymond a few years ago. He wrote a book. Eric's a kind of big man in the open source GNU open source world. And he started to realize that what motivates programmers to give their code away in the open source world isn't the same motivation factors that happen in a kind of hierarchical software company such as Microsoft or of a big company. So they tend to be very top-down and process-led and project management and prints methodology and deliverables, this, that, and the other. But that isn't necessarily a great way of getting good code out of programmers. And there's this classic problem with programmers. You know, you've got a big project coming along. You can't just throw more programmers at a problem. It just doesn't work that way. So he was kind of trying to analyze what actually happens in the open source community. And he came up with this theory called the bazaar, which is basically you've got a large community that quickly gets itself motivated about things. Yeah. So they find themselves a little problem and they want to solve it. And if you've ever worked with programmers, that's exactly how we kind of think about things. We get excited about programmers. Programming. We don't get excited about going to some management committee or even getting an award for it. It's the reward is within the craftsmanship of the code. This is just to remind me of, I just put this little slide in from last night in the pub. This is the classic 1976 former band slide that was done in a magazine. It says, this is a chord, this is another chord, this is a third chord, now former band. I like it because it just says, you know, you got to get the message down to a simple set of steps. So we've been doing training, yeah? We're always trying to make it as easy as possible for the people to understand what the steps are to make a podcast. This is our website. This is probably a very early version from last year. Tim Garton-Ash there, who was one of these people who said, yeah, fine, you can have my talk on Isaiah Berlin. This is free and open access, and just an FAQ again, because we get it asked all the time. It's not really free and it's not really open. It's not really standards based. Yes, it is. It's open, free, based on standards. This is our early draft of the splash page that was done by Chris in the university webmaster and Oliver at the back. Lovely looking stuff. So that was an early attempt. It's going to whiz through the technical slides alert section. So if you're allergic to technical slides, just close your eyes. Basically, the model is you capture your stuff, you create it as an MP3 or an MPEG-4. You need to put it somewhere, so you put it on your web server. So again, we've got a devolved methodology at Oxford. We're not centralized, we're decentralized. We don't say put it all into Amazon. We say just put it somewhere that you're happy with. And we have come up with some clever tricks to make sure that it's going to stay there, and if it's not, we'll cache it. So just give us a URL, then do it yourself, you know? Former band, you create your podcast feed. You know what your metadata is. You're a subject expert. You do it yourself. We don't need a committee to do this. Okay? Scary slide. This is from Rob Coper, who's talking a little bit about learning object repositories. The key thing here is he says there's got to be a community facilitator in all of this. You know, you've got mentoring. It's the same old classic thing with e-learning. It won't just happen if you just create the Millennium Dome silo. This is another thing. Just this graph is just a scary graph to show you. These are all the steps that we have to go through as a team to check things. So we have to log the interest, we have to log the copyright, we have to collect metadata, we have to encode and things like that. Here's another dull technical slide. So iTunes in October 2008, that's what it looked like, and we were up in the top corner there somewhere. Those are the little adverts, and Cambridge is up there, and Open University as well. So that's how we launched. It had an instant hit, and we got a great series of downloads straight away, and everybody got very, very excited. And we got lovely statistics with big curves that we generate all the time, and we chuffed a bit with it. So we, what else we had to do is just think how we represent the institution. So our web team, central web team, came up with a site that's itunes.ox, and that links across to the iTunes software itself. And it also gives the option for people in libraries or people who don't want to download the client stuff just to go through the old-fashioned web version, podcast.ox. So this is what it looks like if maybe on launch. The VC was very kind enough to do a video to help us promote it. And it also coincided with our alumni campaign to raise some money, which Michael Palin made a nice little video for as well. Content, I think this was done quite a while ago, but basically there's got stuff in humanities, medical sciences, social sciences, just out of interest of something I've noticed. The social sciences seem to have taken to this whole project a lot more than any of the other subject areas we've got. And I think that's because there's just an element of public dissemination in their activities anyway. It's just part of the nature of social science. Course level, there's the cracking engineering courses. We're generating a lot of new stuff. Marcus de Sortoy's doing a... We emailed him and said, you fancy doing something? He says, yeah, I'll do a regular podcast series just talking with Oxford scientists about their research. Grab a few people in the friends and colleagues and stuff, just get them around a table. Again, we're talking really low tech. We're talking a single digital recorder. I think when they couldn't find a room to do it, they went and potted across the road and did it in another room. Legal workflow, just a note to say, it's really, 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 really is important that you get your legal processes, and it's a workflow. We at Oxford, we basically get everybody to sign a piece of paper, and we also get the head of department or somebody similar to sign it off as well, so that we in the central units don't, we check things, but we don't actually, we're not the gatekeeper, apart from some technical things and some paperwork. It's up to the head of department and the person giving the talk to be the gatekeeper, fundamentally, although we do check all stuff before it goes up. This is just two slides now. Marketing. Not something I knew anything about at all, marketing, but whoa, have I learned some stuff in the last year. It's all, we've had great support from our marketing thing, department, our communications officers. They've just generated some fantastic material that helps promote our material. I mean, it's nice to have a project that's well known and has hit the headlines on the BBC News and things like that. So that was last year's University Challenge. So, my little joke. Usage statistics, we've got lots of them. They're all quite good. They're all going up. That's what people want. What I want is a steady flow of material that doesn't cost a huge amount of money, that is of good quality. Okay? It's ending up being mostly audio. That doesn't concern me too much. I think audio is absolutely cracking for most things. We've had people in this room here do talks on statistics. I've listened to it on my iPod as an audio format. Sounds fine to me. I did a bit of statistics when I was at university. Sounds useful stuff. Steps to achieve success. This is the one thing I would just say. We basically had a small management team of five people, and that would be my top tip. We had the university webmaster, our technical top bod, our communications lady, somebody representing teaching and learning,
and project manager.
So how can we move forward together? That's the question for today. If we've got some stuff and you've got some stuff, let's think about maybe what we could do together. Thank you very much.